You're listening to the Label Machine series, a podcast to inspire and help indie record labels and artists to build income streams for their music. I'm Nick Sadler, a music entrepreneur that has helped start and run multiple indie record labels. In this series, I'll be speaking with music industry leaders about their experience and the lessons they learn on how they both market and grow their music income. Welcome to the Label Machine series, where we discuss with successful industry professionals how artists and record labels sell music. My name is Nick Sadler, and today's guest is Rebecca Smart-Batkin.
Batkin.
I was nervous. I was going to say that wrong.
I know. I've heard bacon. You know, it's
Batkin. So, yeah, where Rebecca helps musicians promote music and social media with proven strategies developed from 250 plus startups. Very impressive. Rebecca, how are you today?
I'm doing good.
Yep.
Yeah.
And where are you calling in from?
From Ibiza. It's not a sunny today. It's a pretty gray day, but still, you know, paradise.
Island paradise. And what? How did you end up in Ibiza? Because you're originally from Norway, is that right?
Yeah. Well, I'm half Norwegian, half American, but I grew up in Norway, so I consider myself Norwegian. Okay. But I've basically been a digital nomad for the last 5 years, where I've worked predominantly as a consultant. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing this online, and through moving into the music industry more through my consultancy and also some event production, I've then decided that, because I used to live in Bali, which is, you know, another island, and then I moved to Mexico. So I was kind of roaming around the world. And then when I, you know, understood that, right, I need to focus more on the music industry, you know, another tropical island came in mind, which is the, you know, a heart of mine, which is Ibiza. So it just all fell into place, basically.
So you, with working with 250 startups, how did you manage to work with so many companies?
So I was, are you familiar with these accelerator programs?
Yes.
Yeah, so basically I was a mentor in one of the accelerator programs that the government in Norway set up. So then I was doing this for 4 years. So you know, it was 20 individual companies, personal brands, but each, you know, each 3 months period, I was working very closely with these companies and launching them and being a mentor, because my expertise is the online. I mean, I understand internet. Mm-hmm. So it's and also how to launch a product or a business or anything online. So through that periods of years of, you know, that's how I got in contact with so many brands, personal brands, businesses, and a lot of them have become quite successful as well.
Oh, nice. Do you know what the success rate was?
I had to, like, because I had to report these to the government, even, because it's a governmental initiative. Yeah. I don't remember the numbers now. I can find this, and I should know these things. Yeah. But at the top of my head, I don't remember. Out of 20 people that was going into the program, I remember this, probably about 3 ideas got to success in a way that they could actually fund themselves by living at it. The rest, 17, didn't work.
Oh, wow. That's not bad. It's not bad.
Yeah.
And so you're working with all these startup companies. What was the impetus to move into music? Like, why music? I mean, it's a very challenging, if you've got the pick of all the different industries, why did you pick one that's so challenging?
Well, for me, because I'm an entrepreneur. I've also co-founded a few companies myself, and I'm also a programmer. Mm-hmm. So for me, I've been fascinated with how tech has changed the music industry, mm-hmm. and how it's also made it more accessible to the world. And it's kind of, tech has been a very big impact mm-hmm. in the music industry, in my opinion. And so the fascination for, even though I'm not a musician, the fascination for the industry has been there. And that's also why I then got involved in creating events at arenas such as South by Southwest and other, you know, Bylarm, which is in Norway, where tech and innovation merges with music, which is kind of where I belong, where in, you know, where tech meets music meets marketing. And that's also in the, you know, in the recent year, I decided also to work as a consultant more in the music industry to get to know the industry. So I was working, helping music tech companies and helping one company was Advamobile. They were doing mobile marketing, one of the first ones out there to do mobile marketing for musicians to establish, you know, super fans and how they can communicate with their super fans. So, you know, for me, it was, it's, I've been test, you know, I've been working my, my, you know, into the industry for quite, quite a few years now. And yeah.
And so now you've,
loving it.
Can see you've got such a big smile when you talk about it. It's so good.
Yeah. No, because I mean, I'm so, I've been working with startups for so, like, I've been building tech companies. And for me, when I'm focusing on the online presence where I have to essentially build fan bases around tech companies that have no personality and no story and no nothing. So all of this is kind of created, right? But when I work with musicians, they already have a story. They're already have, I mean, they have so much content. And for me, it's much more inspiring to work and to be able to help them grow themselves, because it's just, I mean, it's, for me, it's just gives me more energy, I guess.
No, I mean, I'm very much the same. I like working with people that are, you know, that are also at that beginning and startup and the energy of it as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can identify with that. So you've started consulting, you've started working in the music industry, working with music tech startups, and then this year you've started creating your own products as well. So the first one's about the Instagram package. So, like, can you tell me about that briefly?
Yeah, so I mean, I've become, people say, yeah, that's the Instagram girl, you know, but but for me, Instagram is just the easiest, that's the easiest starting point for musicians in a way to, like, for a channel, if they're going to choose a channel to communicate through, Instagram is the easiest. So that's why I started there as well. But essentially what I want to do is I want to build a platform with tons of tools and resources that will help these musicians themselves and how they can actually build their own audience, their own fan base, and their own business around their music. So for me, that's starting with connecting actually your music to an audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that, the, my first starting point was Instagram and how musicians can actually use Instagram now in converting a follower into a fan.
So I know you, so you essentially what they need is they need a structure and a plan to be creative around.
Exactly. Where did you get that from?
From your website.
Wise words, man.
Wise words from Rebecca. How, let's say I'm an artist. I'm not particularly... I've got an Instagram that I share some personal stuff with my friends and family, but I'm not an extrovert of a musician, but I understand I want to be on Instagram, but it's all photos and videos. How do you approach an artist that way to help them to grow, like getting over that particular barrier?
Well, it's for me, creating content is like exercising almost. So it's not like getting that one piece of content perfect. It's getting in the practice of communicating through sharing content. So if you're not going to find the right format and the right way, but for me, it's just, okay, we need to first start engaging regularly. That's the first step. What can we do every week that they're comfortable with? Because a lot of the musicians are like, I don't want to show myself on camera. You know, the producers out there, they're behind the scenes. They're for a reason. They like to be behind the scenes, but now suddenly they have to create videos and show themselves and promote themselves. So it's, you know, that step can be quite kind of scary for them. So I would then look at it more as, you know, working out and then, you know, start very basic and then look at, all right, well, I'm starting here. How can this content piece grow over time? And every time you're going to do something, which you are every week, you think of like small things that you can improve on it per time. And then there'll be mistakes, there'll be everything, there'll be awkward things, but that's how you learn, right? So
Yeah, I've sort of got a theory that there's when artists start out, there's two types of artists. There's ones that are quite happy to be out there showing everything they've got. They're always online. You know, they're sort of, you know, the extrovert. And then there's the, and then there's the artist that's made it, who's very cool and doesn't really show much of them, or just does like very cool, highly stylized pictures. They don't really say very much. Music's incredible, you know, might be a top 40 artist. But then I find there's a lot of artists that are starting out that want to be there straight away. But they're not that like 0.01% that has just, you know, they're the next Prince, or they're the next artist who's just can rely on their music 100%. But they think they can just rely on their music 100% to start connecting with people. And working with artists as well, I find the same thing. You just need to, they need to get over that and just sort of embrace like getting themselves on camera. And like you said, I guess practicing, like going to the gym, doing a little bit every day.
And what's kind of interesting is that, you know, your first followers and your first community is so important, because those are the ones that are, you know, connecting with you on an emotional reason. You know, they're actually buying into more than just your music. And that's what essentially you want when you're building a fan base around your music. Mm. So creating content and communicating in that way is crucial for that, to actually engage with those, what I call in business language, early adapters. Because when I talk business, you know, language, if you want mass market success, if you want that, you know, sell out for and make millions, you have to go through the early adapters. There's no way around it. Mm. And the early adapters buy from emotions. And the same goes with an artist, right? So if you can find the ones that buy into you and your music, but more importantly, you as well, that's your tribe. And that's important for a musician.
Mm. Yeah, I agree. So, so just very quickly before we get on to the marketing questions, the artists that you have worked with, I'm just interested, what kind of, are they more bands? Are you more working producers, DJs, or a range?
Right now, there's a lot of producers in my program. And producers understand they have to invest, and they have to, you know, they have a little bit different understanding of creating a business sometimes. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of DJs in my program as well. And I have a lot of musicians, a lot of rappers sometimes. I'm interested in the R&B and hip hop market in the US. Mm-hmm. So it's for every, I work with genre non-specific. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, my system can be deployed anywhere. And you know, sometimes I think, you know, I've attracted the audience based on what kind of type content I share. And I share, my example is my musical taste sometimes, you know, so it's, you know, a reflection of that.
Yeah. There's a lot of producers for me as well. And I wonder if that's because it's so easy to be a producer these days. You know, you need just a good computer and, you know, download even a cracked version of Ableton or something. Yeah. But, you know, for so little money, you can start being a beat producer. So we're going to get on to some of the music marketing trend questions. The first one I wanted to open up with was Spotify, which is what everybody is infatuated with these days. And, you know, rightfully so, if you build up your Spotify regular followers, while there are pennies, you know, very fractions of the pennies that are being built up, you know, if you've got a follower and they always listen to your music, you're eventually building up your revenue, you know, rather than just a one-off buy. So what have you been finding works for getting on playlists for your artists?
For getting on other people's playlists? People's, right? Because there's two strategies to playlists. You can create your own playlist, or you can get on other people's playlists.
So this is getting on other people's playlists.
Right. So the best way to get on other people's playlists. So think of playlists, they're kind of like radio channels. So and the people that are behind the playlist, they're actual, you know, the best playlists out there. They're human beings. You know, they have their, this is a part of their passion. That's why they're doing it. So they're, you know, they're putting a lot of time and effort. So what I've seen work the most for my musician is to actually establish more of a business relationship sometimes, and more of a, that you actually start networking with these playlist owners. Because the more of them that you have and that you network with on a regular basis, when you launch your music, you can have a more of a dialogue with these mini, I call them almost mini distributors. So every time, like my musicians, whenever they launch something, they always know they need to grow. Okay, so I'm working with, you know, 5 playlists this time. Well, next time I need to grow that to 10. And then next time I need to, so they always kind of grow their playlist that they're working with. Because you can buy it, get on that playlist, get on that. But essentially the best ones out there that really generate a lot of streams are the ones that actually have people behind them that are music, like interested in music, and that also want to put quality in their playlist. That's why they're successful as well. So you need to start actually engaging and establishing that, you know, relationship with these playlist owners, because they're going to be key. Yeah.
So what would you specifically then, if you wanted to, I'm an artist and you say, okay, you need to connect with 5 playlists. Like, what do you advise you do? Are you looking for their email and emailing them? Like, talk us through that bit of the process.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of research that needs to be done here, right? So first, you need to research your audience. You need to really understand your audience, because then you, based on your audience, you need to find the different playlists that are relevant to you. So, because you need to understand what are your audience listening to right now and find those, right? So it's a little bit research there. Mm-hmm. So then when you find these playlists that are relevant to your brand, you then have to research them and find their, maybe their Facebook page or their Instagram page. Most of these good playlists, they have different pages that you can contact them through. Mm-hmm. And I will then craft up. And this is where everyone does things wrong. So when they introduce themselves, they're like, hey, I've created this song, da 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 da. Like, first of all, like, you need to create a pitch. Like, musicians really need to understand how to present themselves. And not only present themselves in a way that this is me, but how I bring value to you. You know what I'm saying? So when you present someone, make it really specific, that almost that, you know, that I've, this song, it fits, you know, I think if it, you know, the reason I'm contacting you is because I like you, but this and this, very specific. Mm-hmm. And then because I created this song specifically, and I think that it would fit well because this. That's the pitch, you know? You're telling them also where to use it. So instead of like blah, 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 which everyone gets.
So what you're saying is you're focusing on very specifically the music. So it's not so much the pitch where you're trying to say, hey, I had a, you know, I was on BBC Radio 1 last week and I'm playing at XYZ Festival. Like, so, you know, that's my story. This is why you should play my music. What you're saying is you need to go in and say, the last month they played these particular artists, they played like Stony Road, and my music sounds just like Stony Road and Christian Lofa. You play those artists, that's why you should put my music in here.
An example. So like, let's say DJ Sasha is a great example. He has tons of playlists that he launches regularly and has a lot of activities on his playlist. So if I want to get on his playlist, I would then research his and what he does with his playlist. He's very specific with his themes of his playlist. One was at, you know, the end of the night, perfect, you know, songs that have, and the other one was, you know, heads down, music up. And so I would maybe if I were smart, because I'm innovative, I would also pitch maybe a concept to a playlist. You know, are you thinking about this, or, you know, propose an idea, because you're working together. It's a business proposal, right? So you need to plant sometimes an idea somewhere. So think of it this way, that you're also, the people you want to work with, even though they own playlists, think of them as partnerships. So you're planting, you know, visions together as well, but you need to create that. Even though it's as simple as a song, but it's when you start working with the playlist owner, if that's good, like that's a relationship for life, you know? Whenever you have a song that you launch, you can just go back to, you know, everyone that you have a good relationship with. And then, you know, you have a pretty good distribution.
And do you find that the playlists, they're happy speaking, like, let's say everybody did this, you know, they'd be inundated their inbox with thousands of emails, theoretically. So how is a playlister is deciding how to go through? Is it merely that just people aren't pitching themselves properly and there's an opportunity there? Or do you get what I mean?
I think that musicians are trying the easiest way out now, where they're trying to buy into, they're getting these spams like, oh, buy this money and I'll get you on these playlists. And they're getting some streams of it, and they're getting kind of false, in my opinion, they're getting false hopes, you know, because they're, you know, getting a little bit from their money, but not really, because this is essentially about building a business.
They're getting some social proofing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think there is a place sometimes for, you know, these like bots follows, or you get on playlists where they play all the kind of each other. I think those can be useful when part of a big campaign and you're starting out to get a little bit of social proofing. So if someone lands on your SoundCloud page, you don't have like 10 plays on your song type thing. But you're right. Long term, it's never a good way to go. Okay. So the big takeaway from that is start building relationships with relative playlists.
And relative to your brand, you know, really relative to understand your audience there. Because a lot of people are creating playlists out there. So let's say your Deadmau5 as an example, you should then think of people that create playlists in the gaming industry, you know, that when they game live, when they do streaming, you know, there's different types of playlists. They create playlists that they have in the background when they stream. So if gaming is a big part of your, you know, niche, that's, I always use gaming because I'm, you know, that's one of the companies I started.
I mean, I guess as well as for the people that have got record labels specifically, it's even more important to build up those relationships, because if you're a label and let's say you're even putting out, you know, a release once a month, you know, that's probably a lot more than a lot of artists are putting music out. And so if you've got a playlist that you're putting, I mean, record labels do tend to sort of put out the same style of music. You want to have those relationships in place, and it's worthwhile investing in them because, yeah, once you've got 20 relationships with the playlists, every time you have a release, they're all going to get playlisted.
Yeah.
And your label's going to go well. So, I guess if, you know, if you are listening and you do have a label, it's even more important to focus on building up those relationships as well.
Creating a business. So these are your mini distributors. They're very important. So that type of networking is very important to do on a consistently basis and grow that, you know, pool of people that you're working with, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And also if you're someone that's not, you know, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. If it's not your strength, find someone that is their strength and partner up with them into your company, or pay them to do it as well, because it is so important.
You need to be able to pitch yourself. You need to be able to, you know, you need to, you're a salesperson as well, you know, as a marketing person, as a product, you know, you're everything as a musician. So.
Yeah, that's true. So my next question, blogs, are they still relevant?
Blogs in a way, be more specific, relevant to the
musicians. When I talk about, so when I'm talking about blogs, I'm not talking about music publications that have got an online presence. So NME magazine, you know, the magazine, and then there's the online version. There's Mixmag magazine. There's an online version of it. I'm talking about just specific music blogs where I guess it's like much like the playlister, there's a real human or a few friends that are running it together. They used to be massive years ago. Do you think they're still relative today? Like, do you think it's still worth, you know, creating a relationship with the blogs and getting music on there, or it's not worth your time?
I would check their. It's very easy to check that. So if you know that this blog, you can check if they have a community around them. You then go to their social channels, you go to their rooms where they're communicating. If they have an engaged following, yes, it's worth your time because they're following, you know, people are engaged in their content. So for me, it doesn't matter if it's what type of format necessarily. It's just a test kind of if, you know, their people are responding to the content and if they're being kind of some sort of authority, basically, because then if they have that, an influence in some way, and if their focus is, you know, through writing text, you can see if people are responding to it. And you can also check, you know, visits on the website. There's tons of things that you can check if actually people are getting traffic as well, you know.
So it's, if they've got an engaged audience, then yes, it's worth speaking to them. If you go on.
But I would try, like, for you as a musician, you need to test, right? So you need to try out like these. All right, I'm trying playlist this. I'm trying this method this week. So for like, I would try out everything to begin with and just test and then see like, oh, this one worked out really well for me, you know, and not kind of limit yourself in the beginning, because it's test and error, right? That's, and that's, you're going to fail yourself to success. That's what I told my all my companies, like, the sooner we fail, the sooner we get to success.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So I guess blogs, yes, potentially they can be relevant, but test and find out and do, yeah. And like you said, do your research again.
Yeah. Cause there's other, cause you need to prioritize your time as a musician. And I wouldn't necessarily start with blogs. I would start with placing your music in content that is video. That is because that basically plays your music right in front of people. So I would then try to focus, you know, where I could do that and place it in front of my audience, because that's why it's important to understand your audience. So you can then focus on playlists that are basically placing your music right in the middle there, you know? And also, you know, gaming, streaming, people that are live streaming, influencers, you know, that need content, you need music in their content. There's so many ways that you can establish, you know, relationships through.
Okay. So moving on to PR, what do you recommend artists, what do you recommend your artists to use when it comes to PR? Do you think they should use PR for singles? Should it only be saved for albums?
PR is a great, if PR done wisely, PR is very effective. And that's also a wise way of sometimes standing out in the noise. You know, if you're able to get some PR, because essentially everyone is online. It's so much noise there. So PR, if done strategically, kind of can be a very effective way to growth hack your visibility.
So what would be, is there an example you could use where you've done that with an artist in the past, or you've seen it done successfully?
Well, I can give an example of how I did it with me.
Yeah.
The biggest growth hack out there right now is you need to create more. No, what was the question again? Sorry, I lost the train of thought.
So yes. What I was asking is, so an example of where you've successfully implemented a PR strategy where it's worked really well, where you've kind of managed to use PR successfully to
get more eyeballs. There you go. Now I'm there. So I could use an example of what I did, because you need to choose PR can be very differently, right? So you can get publications to publish your content, or you can get magazines to publish you. So what I did, because I knew I wanted to have a meeting with defected labels. Mm-hmm. So what I did, I created some content specifically for them and then I published it, right? But then I was able to get some strategic people to tag it so that lit magazines start resharing it. So it got to my source, if that makes sense. So you can create these like PR stunts sometimes.
So what specifically did you create for defected that they were going to be interested in?
My format is writing, right? So I always start writing. Mm-hmm. So what I did is, because I'm an entrepreneur, I always dissect business strategy. So I went in there and I said, okay, what strategies have they implement? Like, why are they so successful? And then I always write it in a format where like, so what can my followers learn from them? So, cause they've done some cool choices through their journey. Mm-hmm. So, but essentially I'm writing this to get their attention and to get some strategic people's attention, but I'm also creating value to my community. So it's kind of like a PR stunt that you're creating yourself, and that you can also then test the value of your content, because it resulted in, you know, many magazines resharing it, a lot of, you know, tons of visibility. So a good example is Trizzy Track. He's a producer from the US that's doing this very nicely, where he creates content specifically for someone. So he created a beat for Meek Mill, and then he got people to tag that song, and then he got the attention of Meek, and then he reshared it, and then this too suddenly has 500,000 followers, you know, like, and then he has a business, and then he has, so you can create these online PR stunts almost around your value.
So it's about creating some focus and some very specific goals and creating a plan to get to that goal,
A good example of a client that I've worked with for years is Hump House. So we managed to pitch their idea into Netflix, and he got a Netflix miniseries, and he's a DJ from Tucson, Arizona. So it's all about creating an opportunity, and no opportunity is just going to come your way. Mm. It's about planting it and being as specific as possible and trying to plant that idea into as many, you know, avenues as possible.
Mm. That is some good takeaway notes from being, from doing PR. So now we're going to move on to some, the area which we all know very well, paid advertising. I mean, there's a bunch of questions here I've got. So I guess.
Oh, I see this, right? You know? I mean, water for this, man. You know? I'm sweating.
So, I mean, I've just got, you know, what do you use? What works? So, yeah, at the moment, what are you using and what works for you on paid advertising? And I guess when we're talking about this, we're specifically probably, I guess when we talk about it, break up Facebook and Instagram, even though you use the same, if people aren't aware, because Facebook owns Instagram, when you are running paid advertising, you actually use the same advertising platform to go to both sides. But if you are talking about them, but still just kind of break that up. So yeah, what for you at the moment, what's working in paid advertising?
So what works for me is that I always, the most important thing if you're ever going to use paid advertising is to, as soon as possible, try to start creating these custom audiences for yourself. So if I get very technical for your audience now, let me know. Because yeah, no. I'm going to go, yeah.
So just to briefly explain, what's a custom audience?
Yeah, so you need to use some, I'm going to take a step back, and you need to use something called Facebook Pixel. So Facebook Pixel is basically something that you can, that Facebook is giving you, a piece of code, a piece of pixel, mm-hmm. that you can place in your website that tracks the activity. So then Facebook gets information about the people that are in your website or, you know, in your rooms, basically. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a website, you can then start creating custom audiences based on everyone that, you know, viewed your videos for longer than 30 seconds, you know, who are they? And then, yeah, so you need to, if you have these websites, which most artists should do have websites.
So if you don't have a website, you should definitely get one. And then once you've got your website, put your Facebook Pixel
Put your Facebook Pixel in, and then you can start actually tracking different steps. So what's worked for me is that I track the thank you pages on my website. And what does thank you pages means? That means that they registered for something, they purchased something, which I'm tracking separately. Mm-hmm. They registered for a webinar, you know, they downloaded a freebie or something. So I'm tracking specifically the thank you pages. And I'm creating a custom audience of that, those, of course. But then I'm also creating a lookalike audience that you can then place in different locations. So, you know, I'm creating an audience that's, you know, this looks like, and I'm placing it in this country. So that for me has worked the best.
Okay. So you're taking a, so in the context, I guess, of a label or an artist, if you were giving away a free bootleg or track, they would, you know, you'd say on the thank you page of giving an email to download it, you'd have the pixel on there and you'd recognize, yeah. Hey, they downloaded track by, you know, the Stony Road band. And then you would know, great. So we've had 5,000 people with this pixel. You would then go back into Facebook and say, we've got this custom audience, and you do a lookalike, which means Facebook looks at those 5,000 and sees who are other people close to that.
Yeah.
And you would say, and those people that are close to that are living in Germany, I now just want to target them because the band's going to be doing a tour there next month. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly. So that to me has given the best conversion. But for what I say to most musicians out there, if you don't have content in your channels, if you don't actually communicate through your channels and create content consistently, mm-hmm. using ads, you're not going to optimize, you know, the results that you're getting from the ads, because you're going to get visibility. And yes, some of them might be interested in registering right away or whatever that you're promoting usually through the ads, but you're losing a lot of people that are not, you know, because most of the visibility are not ready to commit, but they might go to your profile and check you out. If you don't have content, if you don't really use your profile and share, you know, value, you're really missing out on a lot of traffic that you're getting and value that you would get from these ads.
So what you're saying is, you, even before you probably want to start spending money on paid advertising, you want to make sure that your current platforms, you're already putting content out there and engaging with your audience.
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
So if you are, taking that content, how have you, we talked about Facebook, we talked about ads on Facebook. On Instagram, what are you finding works best for getting people, clicking through on Instagram feeds or Instagram stories? Are people clicking through from Instagram stories? Is that working or not?
Clicking through what? To what you...
So if you were advertising either an upcoming show, not quite relevant at the moment, but you had a EP out, it's Friday, the EP's out Friday, you want people that have been following you on Instagram, that you read your stories, to now go and listen to it on Spotify. What are you finding works to get those interactions up on Instagram?
To get people to go then over to your other platforms, basically.
Yeah. What's the difference, maybe for the audience as well, what's the difference between on Instagram, you can have a one link in your bio. So, are there any ways that you can get around from having multiple links from your bio? And if someone is from your stories and you do swipe up, what are the restrictions on that?
So there's some limitation as far as to get the swipe up functionality on the story, you need 10,000 followers. So the second you hit that 10,000 mark, you'll be able to then through the story also exit, which is huge. Which then, we don't even get me started on the story highlights and the opportunities of the story highlights, of the Instagram profile then, where you can present your music. I mean, Martin Garrix is a good example of how he's using the story highlights of presenting a song, highlights, and then exiting out of the platform as well. So the story could be a good way when you get over 10,000, if done correctly as well, but they just also opened up to linking out of the IGTV. So that's interesting. So now when you do the caption, you can then insert your link into, so whoever's viewing through the IGTV can now then click on the link as well. So there
is, is that you still have to have 10,000 followers though?
No, anyone.
Right. So there's a way around. If you don't have 10,000 followers, you have got a way of linking outside Instagram now by using IGTV.
Yeah. So you can just put then the link in the caption. So whoever's then viewing through IGTV, which if you're creating longer than 1 minute videos, you should use IGTV because Instagram's pushing this platform now. They're testing it. They're just launching monetization now with, some selected accounts. So whoever's using it, for me, whenever I post a feed video versus the IGTV video, it's half of the visibility on the feed versus IGTV. Because Instagram is pushing traffic there now because they're testing that part of the platform.
Right. So focus your anything over a minute content on IGTV at the moment.
Yeah.
And so you could essentially create if you had an EP, you could create a minute 30, almost teaser trailer of the EP with some visual stuff, put that on IGTV and have a click to go and listen to that on Spotify. And that'd be a great way of, and with IGTV, can you boost IGTV or can you promote it, paid promotion, or is it on algorithms at the moment?
I'm pretty sure you can probably boost it, but I'm when it comes to because ads also allows, let me get back to you on that one actually, but I'm pretty sure that they allow boosting for the, I never boost, that's why, because it's the worst strategy ever.
Right, yeah.
To boost. Because if you're actually going to go in and use the advertisement, you should then kind of think of it from, do it properly. So that's why I don't use the boost functionality at all.
Yeah, that is it. That's actually a really good tip. Don't boost. Don't go, do you want to boost this post for $50 or something?
No.
Just flushing. Well, you're not flushing money down the toilet, but you're better off just learning how to create a very basic advertising campaign.
It's so easy.
And just spend $50 over 7 days or something. Yeah.
Because when you boost, you're not able to create a custom audience. You're not able to, get narrow down specific on the audience. You have very limitations to when you're actually making, and there's tutorials out there, free tutorials that step by, it's so easy. It's well worth your time. If you're actually going to spend money on ads, don't boost.
Another tip there, don't use boost.
Yeah.
Have
Instagram give you really fault information, man, because they just tell you the likes that are getting more, you know, the posts that are getting more likes, which aren't the posts that you want to boost. You want to boost that are getting more of those deeper metrics, that the ones that are getting a lot of shares, bookmarks, profile visits, you know, so likes is just vanity. So, you know, the content that I share that are, of course, it gets a lot of like, you know, quotes or something very easy that people engage with, but didn't necessarily trigger a lot of profile visits. You don't want to, because you want people to go to your profile when you're, you know, running ads. So you need to have content that also generates profile visits. And you can check that out very easily now to see what type of content that you already created and what that generating profile visit. Profile visit is important metrics on Instagram.
There we go. Another tip. So when it's the other thing with paid advertising, have you had any experience with TrueView, with the YouTube paid advertising?
No, not yet.
Yeah, I it's only something I'm just sort of getting into now. The impression I get is you got to have big bucks for it to work. If you've got a more than a grand, it's worth going on YouTube. But otherwise, it's best to stick with Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, Facebook and Instagram is so cheap. And now I've noticed even during coronavirus crisis that the prices are going down.
Yeah,
really, they have. Like the prices on ads are really cheap these days. I wonder. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why. I mean, probably because
I get if you've got a retail store, like any brick. Brick and mortar places now will have just ceased any advertising because there's no point in advertising people to come into your closed store. Restaurants closed, so all that advertising budget has just been pulled. And that's then I think you've also just got other traditional businesses that might be, you know, just running general campaigns. You know, when you've got to start making cuts, advertising and marketing is one of the first, you know, parts of a company to go.
Yeah,
I'd say that's why there's just a competition for that
because there's a lot of noise. Like the visibility, my organic visibility has drastically gone down during the coronavirus because everyone's online. You're competing. I mean, how can you compete against all of everyone that's going out online these days? You know, you have the best ones access to, you know, top that you would pay a lot of money to for free. You know.
Mm. So, yeah, that's true. That's true. So
pay up. No, I'm just kidding.
So what rookie mistakes or common problems do you see over and over again?
I just wrote a blog post about this that I'm publishing today. 5 mistakes that people are doing on musicians are doing on Instagram. I'm probably publishing it in 10 minutes, actually.
Well, do you want to give us the top 2?
Yeah, being too general.
Being too general. What do you mean by being too general?
So when you go to people's bio and go to people's profile, they identify as musician, as producer, as DJ, and as so is a million other people. So basically your pitch, your presentation, the more specific that you can get, the better. And the example that I use in my blog that I'm everyone check it out is the Black Madonna. She's great. Go to check her bio. Like, she's very specific, very, you know, she's just, you know, talking to a very specific audience, which is her tribe. And that's how she presents herself. So trying to be general is the biggest mistake, and trying to make content for everyone, trying to please everyone, being too general. So that's one of the biggest mistakes. And I think like to be more, now I did like big one, I'm going to be more hands-on, which is that I see so few actually take advantage of the story highlights, which I already mentioned, because the story highlights is really a great way to present yourself. I'm doing specifically Instagram now because
That's cool. So just quickly for people that might not know, what is the Instagram highlights? What do you mean by that?
So the story highlight is when you go to someone's profile, let's say go to Martin Garrix, you see his profile picture, you see his name, you see his bio, you see his bio link, but then you have these circles underneath them, which is basically you can create highlights of what you've shared on your story. But if you plan this a little bit And you can then basically use the different story highlights with a specific purpose. So one is then to maybe have one that's YouTube. If YouTube is an important channel for you, one of the story highlights should be YouTube. So the second you then get over 10,000, you then have this static content on your profile, because there's not a lot of static content on Instagram. It's a social platform, right? Everything is dynamic. But the static content that you have there is, you know, optimized, and the real estate is really then presenting, you know, if they get to go to your profile, they read your bio, they see your bio link, and then, you know, they can then present, like what Martin Garrix says, one song is presented there, and then you can put content of you playing it live, you can put content of you creating it, you can put content of the artwork, you can put content of, you know, a preview of the song. You know, there's so much like of you collaborating with the song, and it's a good way to kind of present each song. And it makes your Instagram more of a website then as well. If that makes sense.
So yeah, I get it. So the stories, you can almost, if you've say got four story slots underneath your bio, you can theme them and have one theme as like in the studio type videos. Another theme could be like the latest tracks. Another theme, like you said, could be YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay. And then are you just, and to create those, do you just have a story and just say, I want that to be a highlighted story? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, you just create it. You can just create it on their profile. Plus you see it on when you're editing the profile, and then you see all the stories that you've done. But I mean, you probably weren't aware of, you didn't plan out your stories in that way. So you should then, the way that I did it now, I just organized my, I just did it actually. That's why it's so fresh. I just like, all right, so my story highlights, I want it to be YouTube because I'm just launching my YouTube channel. So one of them is going to be YouTube, and one is going to be my free consultations because I'm doing a lot of these free consultations. I'm sharing a lot of that content as well. So, you know, it's a good way to kind of organize because it's static. So if people go to my profile, then, you know, they can have these different avenues to get to know me as well.
Right. Oh, yeah, I can see how powerful they are. Well, that's an excellent tip.
Yeah. So one was big, one was very specific. And then read my article for the rest.
yes. We will, where I post this, I'll make sure we've got links to the, to check out the blog underneath.
Sorry, my son is on the phone on the other side. He just got a call. I don't know what social life he has at 9 PM here on my phone. So God knows what's happening there.
Well, we're coming to the end, so we'll wrap it up shortly. I guess that a couple more questions for the future of the music industry. What are you most excited about in music and or in music marketing?
Ooh. For me, gaming is such a, you know what made such a big impression on me was the Marshmallow concert that he had inside Fortnite. And it's not about music Marshmallow, but it's that concept. And that's when I understood the impact of actually his virtual reality worlds as well. So he had 10 million people show up in one concert, basically. So think about it this way, like Steve Aoki, how many shows does he do per year? 250 shows on average, maybe, or something like that, right? Yeah, something. And he's traveling all over the world, and how many are average on his shows? There's no way he's reached 10 million to show up on, you know, 10 million showing up live inside the game of Fortnite is just very, that's what I'm.
If he gets 10,000 a show, Steve Aoki, 10,000 is a lot of people, 250 shows. That's only, I think, 2.5 million. So it's a quarter of what Marshmallow got for just.
I'm so glad you're good at math and like that.
I hope I've done that right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's 2.5 million is 250 times 10,000. So
So for me, I'm really exciting. Like whenever worlds merges, like whenever you see these, like, and gaming is a powerful world, and especially now with Twitch. If you're a music producer now, look towards Twitch. You know, this is an interesting, because you can start getting paid for streaming as well, you know? So you can see Deadmau5 there. He gets tons of revenue through going live. But he games, though. But now you see also music producers, they're actually streaming through Twitch.
So when you
say, going live,
are they just sort of streaming what they're doing in the studio? Like, I'm making a beat and they'll just put it on Twitch.
Yeah.
And people, are they people paying like a Patreon type thing, or is Twitch paying them to stream it?
Twitch.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, that's another amazing tip. Get on Twitch.
Mm-hmm.
So one final question. How did you get the middle name Smart?
It's my dad's name.
Really? Wow.
Yes. People think that I just like, yeah, I just, you know, put it there. But no, it's in my passport. It's actually my name. So, and my dad, he's American, then he moved to Norway. So, and he took my mom's name then, Bakken, you know, so that's why Smart and then Bakken.
Yeah. It's a great middle name. It's a great middle name.
I know. For me, it's so, because it fits, because SMART goals is such, it's like, I always operate in SMART goal.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to make like a thing out of that. We're like, because, you know, SMART, you know, specific, measurable, you know, actionable, you know, that's.
I am a big believer in SMART goals as well. What is it? It's specific, measurable, actionable, relatable, and time-based.
Mm-hmm.
Still remember that.
you're good.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. There's some incredible tips in there. So for the people that did tune in live, I hope you guys got some good value out of that. If you did, just raise your hand there and let us know.
Yes.
And
give me some feedback, you know.
Give us some. Oh, there we go. Mario, Mike raising their hands. That's great.
Yay.
And we're going to put this on. It will be available on a replay as well. And you'll probably see little bits of these as well appearing on our Instagram stories in the coming weeks as
feeds. You know, this is great IGTV content.
Exactly. We'll get out some of the question answers and wrap those up. Thank you again, Rebecca.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.